From Relay FM, this is Downstream, a podcast about the present and future of streaming media. This is episode number 72, recorded June the 27th, 2024. I am Master of Ceremonies, Jason Snell, and with me is my special summer podcast guest, TV critic, and my former podcast co-host, Tim Goodman. Hi, Tim.
Hi, Jason. We're getting the gang back together.
Just a little special. So you were on one episode. You were filling a guest on one episode. We talked about the two-episode test and your Substack, Bastard Machine, Substack. Mm-hmm. So for people who don't know, Tim was TV critic for a long time, San Francisco Examiner, San Francisco Chronicle, Hollywood Reporter, got a development deal, worked on the inside for a couple of years, and you now have a Substack where you're writing about TV again, but on your own terms, you decide what you write about. And it's TV and other, and also feelings.
And feelings, yes. I write about feelings.
Mm-hmm. Existentialism,
yes.
Minimalism, wabi-sabi, Portland,
it's all
feelings.
Portland there. It's Portland. It's
natural wine.
It's natural wine. It's architecture. It's design. It's happiness and enlightenment.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't think I could have done that at the Hollywood Reporter. I would have been laid off.
Probably not.
They would be like, what is this column about? This is nonsense.
Is it really just about the truck you hired to move your stuff up a hill?
Can you imagine the myriad trucking stories or the moving stories I've done for the Substack? That would not have gone over well at CHR.
No. However, one of the things that I really appreciated of your time at the Hollywood Reporter is that while being the chief TV critic, whose job was to review TV shows that were coming so fast that, you know, not even two full-time critics could handle it, even close to handle it, that you were also really interested in the transformative process going on at that same time where television was changing because of the world of streaming, which is what we talk about in this podcast. And of course, as the legend goes, your editors were like, more reviews, mule, just keep reviewing. Yeah. So you were, you know, you were trying to write about the success and failure and change of how TV was transforming in that era. But that your editors, you know, were less enthusiastic.
I did a ton of it. You were involved. We talked about a lot of it on our other podcasts. We, you know, we were there. You and I were when we did the podcast, and we were talking on the TVTM, and we would be talking about it, and we had some fun because we were laughing. It was like I would be telling them, like, you know, the streaming wars kind of need to be covered. Like, this is even before we really calling it the streaming wars, and they were like, yeah, I kind of got to do more reviews. And I'm, you know, and then I wrote that piece that said, you know, reviews are kind of useless in the new era. They love that, by the way. They love that. Thank God I was the chief TV critic at the time and they couldn't mess around with me that much. But I was, you know, and I was right. So, and then they're dead now anyway. So I don't really care. But yeah, so much has changed. I mean, I remember back in those days, like, I mean, Apple hadn't even got into it yet. People were trying to come at Netflix. They had no idea how to do it. And I hate to say it, but like all these years later, Jason, I'm not sure they still know how to do it, at least as that New York Times story recently suggested.
Yeah, I want to talk about that. But I do have some other stuff that I want to run through, things that have been going on lately that we've been talking about on this podcast. And then we'll talk a little bit more about yachts. But first... NBA TV. So sports, one of the things we do on this podcast is Sports Corner, because and I know you're a big sports fan.
I am. Mm-hmm.
Interesting times with the NBA where David Zaslav at Warner Brothers Discovery famously said, oh, we don't need the NBA, not really. And the NBA noticed, the NBA heard. And so it sounds like we don't have an update, though. It sounds like NBC and ESPN are going to be the deal, the big packages there, and then Amazon's going to have a small streaming package. It's a possibility that they will try to match one of those, but the truth is they're clearly not wanted. However, the deal still hasn't happened. It's not going to close until probably sometime in July now, it sounds like. So we're going to have to keep an eye on what actually goes on there and what their end game is. But, you know, I think David Zaslav buying a bunch of other sports, small sports rights here and there, is the writing on the wall that they're going to get out of that game, and that's going to be a very interesting and awkward final year for TNT and the NBA next year. And Charles Barkley, of course, coming out and just saying, I'm retiring at the end of that deal, which then there were several stories the day after that that said Don't believe a word that man says.
Smart.
I'm retiring as the you got to report the unspoken unless you back a truck of money up to my house, NBC. So anyway, the NBA deal is still on hold. Hope maybe next time we'll have more to say about that one.
But, I cannot. I mean, that is the TNT show. I can't believe that that would go missing. I can definitely believe Zaslav sort of poo-pooed the idea and didn't really care, and says that, you know, they're bigger than the NBA essentially, and we can do whatever we want. But as I wrote today, he's kind of driving that ship into the ground. But can you imagine so much of my joy of watching national coverage of my beloved Warriors was watching TNT and mm-hmm. Barkley and Shaq and Kenny, and just being able to sort of like, that was a television show that had magic in it that I think Zaslav doesn't see, which is, it's really hard to duplicate that. And I guess, I understand that paying for all for the stuff is expensive, and you can make an argument that maybe sports programming on a niche level is, you know, it's not a bang for the buck, but I think he's making a mistake. But as from a viewer's standpoint, I'm loathe to have to not watch that show. And again, I'm really sad about that.
Yeah, we've talked about on this podcast the idea that like the rights are very expensive, and it may be that sometimes the right answer is to step off and say, you know, this is, I'll get a lot of applause for spending the money, but then I've spent all that money, and do I get it back? Is it worth it for me? And I just, part of me thinks, though, that TNT's entire value as a brand, mm-hmm. not entire, a large portion of the brand, an outsized portion of that brand, is tied to the NBA, right? That has become the Absolutely. Identity of that brand. And then, yeah, they got some baseball on TBS and stuff, but no, it's the NBA on TNT that is really, and that is a business, you know, including the linear, where like cable companies are paying to put TNT on every person who's got a cable package, because in part because of the NBA and like, where are the NBA games? And you lose all of that. You may save some money, but you do risk kind of wrecking that portion of your business.
Well, there's a lot of wreckage going on over
there's
at
a lot of wreckage.
Warner Brothers Discovery.
Yeah.
So he's got his hands full about what wreckage he needs to salvage and stop shooting himself in the foot. I mean, I'm sure those are mixed metaphors, unless he's shooting himself
with a gun that he salvaged from the wreckage.
The sea. Yeah. Yeah. So maybe it's a spear.
It's harpoon gun.
It's a harpoon as he's driving it into. Yeah. So a lot of mixed metaphors there.
That's
but
probably what it is. I mean,
they have a lot of stuff that he has a lot of stuff he needs to fix.
Yeah.
I think the frustrating thing about what's going on, so I know this is, we're talking about TNT and this is a part of it. The frustrating thing that's going on at Warner Brothers Discovery is that, you know, it's all please the shareholders and the consumer and the experience of this place, of that entity, has just gone downhill. No one's talking about HBO. The Max thing was a disaster. And now you're going to like mess up the last vestiges of your ties to cable. And I think that's, I don't know. I mean, maybe there's losing money in there. Somebody's got to be smarter about that than I am, because I don't know all the rights coverage is for them. But every time you give up branding, this is the thing that tried and true holds throughout the industry. Every time you give up branding that everybody understands, be it HBO for Max and now TNT, you're making a mistake.
Well, meanwhile, this podcast launched in the days of CNN Plus, the very short-lived thing. It was coming and then it went. But I note this week that Mark Thompson, the CEO, has said they are planning a subscription program. That they've hired a new EVP of digital products and services, and she will lead a team focused on subscription and other relationships with users. So get ready, everybody, for, I don't know, it's probably not going to be called CNN Plus, but who knows what it is. But it's a real challenge for them. It is, I mean, look, Zaslav's gotten paid so much money And it's very hard, and he's destroyed so much value at the same time. It's really quite amazing. But he has, you know, I think in the end, what will probably happen is that they will end up in a pretty good financial place, but the cost, you know, the decimation of their, of what was once their empire will be staggering. But in the end, if that's what the board and the shareholders want, and if they come away with money, then I guess that's what matters. But I don't know. He is, for somebody who's gotten paid a lot of money, he has also been really good at shooting himself again in the foot with a harpoon that he salvaged from the wreckage. Yeah, so
from the wreckage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, that metaphor. There's no question about it. And you know, there's a reckoning in the country in pretty much every industry, not even just the entertainment industry, for what happens when you have these companies that are just profits for at all costs. At some point, it just seems so blindsided to me that at some point everybody gets paid up front, basically, and then you ruin it, and it's a husk. And how do you it's hard to ruin a Warner Brothers brand, but he's doing a pretty good job of it.
Yeah, well, and who knows what the end game is, and do they sell or do they merge or something else? It's a mess. I'll throw another, since we're talking about HBO, another thing that Julia and I talked about a lot on this podcast is the fact that they're desperate for various franchises. They've obviously poured a huge amount of money into Game of Thrones. There's the one spinoff that's on the air now, House of the Dragon. There's another one that's in production because they want those franchises. Mm-hmm. They've got DC Comics, which they're trying to reboot. But one of the things that they've had that's been a very big success for them over the last few decades is Harry Potter. The challenge there being, not only is J.K. Rowling problematic in a lot of ways, mm-hmm. she also has control over her empire in a way that makes it very unlikely. Like, for example, the Fantastic Beasts movie series, which, you know, she was the screenwriter on at least one of them and maybe more of them. And I mean, that's the sign of a novelist who basically can call her own shots, mm-hmm. and a company that's willing to say yes to whatever because it's this valuable property. But it didn't go well. And the Fantastic Beasts series seems to have basically drained away nothing. But there was that great story, and I think the Wall Street Journal a few months ago, that revealed that what Warner Brothers Discovery actually retains is the rights to the original Harry Potter books, which they already made into movies, right? They already made those. Remember, there are 8 movies about those. Well, so the one thing they can do without at least too much meddling from the author and her approval and inserting herself in the creative process is actually just make the books again. Yes, indeed. So that comes the news this week that the creative team has now been locked in for the HBO TV series version of the Harry Potter books. So that's happening, people. It's happening. And it's Francesca Gardner as the writer and Mark Mylod as the director, both from... both won Emmys for Succession. So, okay. Like, all right. All right. And Gardner also worked on His Dark Materials and Killing Eve and The Rook, which was bad, by the way. Very big book, a book I loved, and a show that was bad. But so anyway, it's happening. And it's going to be, they had talked for a while about it being for Max, but it turns out if you own HBO and you're making expensive programming, you should probably show it on HBO. So it'll just be HBO now. They're just going to make it for HBO. They're not going to make it as a Max original or something. They're going to make it for HBO. But it's another way for Warner Brothers Discovery to squeeze more juice out of that lemon.
Is it going to be just redoing the books as a television show?
Okay. Yep.
So it's not aging the characters?
No.
No,
because for anything like that, you got to go back to J.K. But you could say, we're just taking book one, and season one is going to be book one. And so you get to tell a lot more of the stuff. She'll probably be delighted, right? Because it's all the stuff they had to cut from her book in order to make it into a 2-hour movie. They'll be able to expand out into like a 10-hour or 8 hour or whatever it will be TV series. So it's sort of,
they do it well. It's definitely smart.
More of the same. But it's they're trying to.
Well, there's no new ideas. There's no. One's going to improve that. No, that's been rejected.
I guess not. I have a fun news item, which is the continual kind of like the cable and satellite companies saying, "Well, what if streaming was part of your cable bundle?" So we saw how Charter made a deal with Disney for the ad version of Disney Plus for Charter subscribers. It's an interesting idea of sort of saying, well, you know, what if your cable bundle or, and in the long run, your cable internet bundle, right? It might not even be a TV bundle, but it's, you're getting your internet through your cable company and they will sell you Disney Plus or Netflix or something like that. So the latest one of these came out. It's got so many asterisks, but I at least wanted to mention it. Dish Network, it has a deal with Netflix. And they're going to include the Netflix, again, the ad tier, because that's relatively cheap, with a Dish subscription for 2 years. If you lock in a commitment, because yes, believe it or not, satellite providers are still doing the thing where you have to lock in a 2-year commitment, et cetera, et cetera.
Well, that's how they make money.
That's how they make their money. And so this is a trend. It's interesting because it only lasts for the 2 years and then you would have to pay for Netflix after that. Also, I'm struck by the fact that people have Dish Network. I think a lot of them maybe are in areas where they can't get fast internet. So they're going to be, how are they streaming Netflix exactly? But maybe, I don't know. I don't think I want to know, but this is a fascinating trend where your legacy traditional cable and satellite providers are trying to find a way to make their product a little more interesting by working with streaming providers until it all gets unbundled. We all saw this coming, right, Tim? I mean, we saw this coming 5-10 years ago. This was all clearly the direction, not the details necessarily, but the direction, like, is just, it's going down. That old way is going out. And so they're trying what they can.
Trying to hang on to the last vestiges of it. Mm-hmm. And I think the problem is that they are, because they made so much money on the old way, and it's so hard to let that go. I totally understand that. If I was living on a yacht, as a lot of people are, and I made all my money in cable because you had all these fees, and you, people were locked into these onerous contracts, and you would just printed money for years on end. I would not want that to end, but as we have said many times, technology only goes forward. It doesn't go backward.
Yeah.
And like the thing that they will leave out, Jason, out of all these deals is that, I mean, sure, you can get some people to do things that are not smart for them. And because, you know, we're a dumb country. But most people are smart enough now after they've extricated themselves from all these, you know, their streaming and their cable and their phone and all this stuff. Once you got into a la carte streaming, no one's going to go back if they're smart, because to be able to cancel is the key.
Yeah.
And of course, that's the churn and nobody wants that in the industry and blah, blah, blah. But that's what's been presented to us. So who's going to close the door on that? It's like, We've waited a long time to be able to like have these choices and then at our own discretion say, you know what, you don't have enough left this month. I'm gonna bail. I'll come back in 6 months. That drives them crazy, but I wouldn't give up that freedom for anything. So I think that all of these little last second desperate attempts to, you know, bundles things, which makes me laugh, they're not gonna work for most people.
No. I have some Paramount news too.
Oh, okay.
That's great. So Sherry Redstone put up a for sale sign and then people made her offers and then she took the for sale sign down. Mm-hmm. There was a big piece in your old employer's Hollywood Reporter about like, well, now what? They've got the three-headed CEO. Mm-hmm. There are a bunch of other players. Some keep claiming that they might be interested in buying. Some people are trying to make a power play. Meanwhile, the trio of co-CEOs had a town hall with their employees on. Let me tell you, you worked for corporations. The town halls with the employees, it's never a good sign. No. Let's get everybody together. Oh, is there going to be cake? Maybe. Is there going to be good news? Maybe.
Probably not.
But maybe cake. So come. Mm-hmm. And then the three CEOs appeared and said, we are cutting $500 million in costs because we are not, the things employees love to hear, are not profitable enough, need to pay down our debt and strengthen our balance sheet. Of course, the mm-hmm. things that really make you want to march in there every day
yep.
and do a great job. They're in a difficult situation, right? They have, the Paramount was already kind of in trouble. It has not been aided by the fact that it has been just so clearly for sale. I think I understand you and I talked about this a lot back in the day. Yeah. I understand the impulse of everybody wants to do a streaming service because if you could be one of the ones there when the music stops, it's a license to print money. Mm-hmm. So I get why they did it. But we have reached a point now where you look at especially something like Paramount Plus and you just think, no, it's a bad. It's a bad idea. And so whether they merge it with Peacock or sell the whole company or it's all so up in the air. I don't envy anybody who's involved in this process, especially since the co-CEOs, you know, I don't think it was meant to just keep it running. All Sherry Ritson wanted to do was fire Bob Bakish because he was against her selling it. Turns out she was against it too. Like, who knew? Nobody knew.
They didn't talk to each other.
She didn't even know.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I feel for those three guys who are trying to run this thing, and everybody who works there because their future is a complete mystery now. So I don't know. It's sad to see. I guess I know why they took their shot. I think the real shame, and this has been detailed here before, is like, they got a big offer for Showtime and turned it down and shut down Showtime instead, which is like, well, you could have gotten, that was like $2-3 billion right there. Like, nope, didn't take it. So it's just mismanagement. It's disastrous. It's a shame. I don't know. I'm a Star Trek fan. So I just want to make Star Trek go somewhere good. Just do that.
It's
save it.
Yeah. I mean, going all the way back, right? This has been mismanaged from the beginning. And I think they were so excited that they were going to be coveted, hopefully by like Apple or Amazon or all these big tech companies, that they obviously thought they were worth more than they are. But they, again, the Showtime thing was a boondoggle. And you at one point had Paramount Plus for a while, right? You were a subscriber.
Oh, I've got it. Yeah.
You got it. Yeah. And your thoughts on that are what?
I bought it. I got it for Star Trek,
mm-hmm.
and Star Trek was on it. Mm-hmm. So that's great. Like, done. Good deal. There's not a lot else on there that I find valuable, to be honest. There's not a lot else on there. I do watch what? I still watch Survivor, or I watch it again, and my mm-hmm. daughter watches it, and Paramount Plus is an easy way to do that because it's got all the CBS material on there. But yeah, there's just not a lot there beyond, like I said, I do watch the Star Trek stuff. I mean, really, honestly, if they launched a Star Trek streaming service with just mm-hmm. Star Trek on it, I would pay for that. So, I mean, I'm not the right person. I mean, that's the power of franchises, honestly. That's why David Zaslav is continually looking for franchises is the same thing. That's why Netflix keeps spending lots of money trying to build franchises that they never build because... You know, if you can do it, it's another license to print money because people will come back. But it's not great. Like, and their other, I mean, they did the Frasier reboot, which I haven't even seen, even though mm-hmm. I liked that show. I never have bothered because it's another. It just I don't know if I want another traditional sitcom.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It's not great.
Let me ask you this question.
Okay,
going way back when we were talking about Paramount. Do you think the problem was that, I mean, you know, they make a lot of movies, but apparently they've licensed them other places for the most part. So would you have launched, would you have waited until you could pull back all your movies so that you would have a deeper bench and a vault to process and gone as a mini, like a micro, smaller platform? Or I mean, I know that seems like that goes against everything any of these Hollywood moguls would ever dream of, but where do you think the mistake was? Because we talked a lot about in the early days of Apple, them needing to have more of a library, and then, you know, they have the money to float themselves past that. But, you know, you and I have talked a lot about, like, okay, if you're going to parcel out all this money, you're going to spend it on the Netflixes and the Disneys of the world who have, and to be honest, the Warner Brothers, the HBOs, mm-hmm. and the ones that had the really deep benches, they've mucked that up. But we were talking about, it's all going to come down to value, because you don't want to buy so many things that you're paying a cable style bill. So where do you think Paramount went wrong?
You know, I honestly think all of this, not to lay it all at the feet of Sherry Redstone, mm-hmm. but I lay it at the feet of Sherry Redstone. I think it's mismanagement. Mm-hmm. I think it's mismanagement of, and her dad too, with the splitting of Viacom off from CBS, mm-hmm. in order to give you know, these two executives their own little kind of fiefdoms and try to kind of pump up value. But the truth is, like, I don't have a problem with the strategy. Remember, Paramount Plus didn't start life as Paramount Plus. It started it as CBS All Access.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And that was Les Moonves' idea. And I don't think it was a bad one. It was invest some in streaming content and have CBS content that is very popular, that's in the library, and you put that on there. It's sort of CBS Plus. It's like extra CBS plus some other stuff. And the way he funded it, also brilliant, I think, was like, he didn't have global aspirations because CBS is not a global brand. Right. So he said, we're going to do a new Star Trek show. And according to Moonves at the time, the whole idea was the whole first season of that show was going to be funded before they shot it by selling the international rights to Netflix. And then they sold the international rights of a different Star Trek show to Amazon. And they kept the US rights. I think to stake out some ground and use your leverage as a TV network, traditional TV network, to build kind of a direct-to-consumer business alongside it with really limited aspirations, but kind of have it be containable, mm-hmm. and have Netflix and Amazon's international licensing money pay for you to make that content. I don't know. I mean, maybe it wouldn't have worked out, but I don't think it was a terrible idea. But what happened is, I mean, Moonves gotten rid of for his own bad behavior. It's totally true. It's fine.
Oh, yeah.
But the other problem was Sherry Redstone wanted to exert her authority, put Viacom and CBS back together, demand that they spend more money and have international aspirations and launch international streamers and buy back the streaming rights to the things that Les Moonves sold so that they could have them and spend a load of money. And that's before the whole ownership squabble where she, you know, they turned down Showtime and she turned down this offer that she thought, she sort of fired Bob Bakish, her CEO, because he was against it, and then she turned it down in the end anyway. Like, I have to lay a lot of this at the corporate structure, not to mention the fact that the way it was all structured when it was structured this way was that there were people who owned stock in CBS or Paramount, and then there was National Amusements, the holding company, which Sherry controlled. So Sherry could sell her holding company and give somebody else complete control over Paramount without giving a dollar to Paramount shareholders, which would mean a huge number of shareholder lawsuits, which may yet prove to make the whole company unsellable, which is a disaster, right? So I keep coming back to it's Sherry's empire building that I think really is the root of all of this, because all of their other strategy flails stem, I think, from that. It's a boring answer, but
that's correct.
I think it's the real answer.
Yeah, it's the real answer, because it's basically powerful people making poor decisions. It's a new series I've got.
Yeah, powerful people making poor decisions. Well, I feel for Sherry Redstone, because I do get the sense that she views this as her father's legacy, and that one of the reasons she doesn't want to sell it or break it up or part with it at all is because it's the family business, essentially. And it's the part of her father, you know, is gone, but his the thing that he built and that she feels that she is squiring now is tangible, and seeing it sold off for parts or whatever would be painful. I totally get it, but I think that I'm well aware too that what I don't want to say is Sherry Redstone's a very prominent woman in business, and I don't want to say you know, a prominent woman in business is making an emotional decision. I actually do feel that way, but I feel it. I'm aware of how that can come across, and that's not how I mean it. I actually have a great empathy for her because it is the thing her dad built. I totally get it. But I think it has led to some, you kind of got to be cold in these business decisions sometimes. And I think in the end, she has too much heart, and good for her that she's got that heart, but it's going to cost her billions of dollars. It is. I really think it is.
Yeah, it's very hard to shepherd a family business.
Yeah, and the problem is, like, if your dad owned a shoe store and now you have the shoe store, and the shoe store is on Main Street, and you're like, you know, things are really bad, and I don't want to sell this shoe store to this guy down the street who's going to just take our shoe store and break it into pieces and sell off. He's a real estate guy. The problem is, I feel for that person. The problem is, Walmart just opened, and your shoe store is going out of business. If you hold on to it, it's just going to go out of business.
Yeah.
So you don't have, like, you can't hold on to the past.
Yeah.
You can't, even if it's painful to let it go. I don't know. It's interesting to watch it, but it's so messy.
Very messy, and it's not anywhere near completion yet. So
No, but I get one of her motivations, and I actually really do feel for her about it, because it's got to be very hard to have this conundrum for the thing that's your family business. Like, that's got to be extremely painful.
Yeah, definitely.
There's my sympathy for billionaires for the day.
This is gonna go away real soon, I think.
It is.
Mm-hmm.
Before we go, though, what have you been up to? Any shows that have leapt out at you? Any streamers that you're finding? I know you're doing some deep dives into various streamers on the Substack. Anything jump to mind that has struck your fancy recently?
Well, I think it's and it plays into the sort of counter narrative of this story. I think that a lot of people who are, you know, subscribers to my Substack are, you know, they're like-minded in that they have a lot of subscriptions to smaller things. So they're BritBox subscribers, they're, you know, Criterion Channel, and et cetera. And I think, you know, for me, the two most recent thing, like, getting, I'm late to it. I wrote a whole column about it, but I'm fascinated. My pursuit now of, you know, I have a place up in Portland. So I got my library card through Portland, but you can, you know, I'm in the Bay Area. You can also get one through San Francisco Public Library, which I did. And they have a bunch of streaming options, basically little tokens to do a number of monthly plays on both Canopy and Hoopla. And there's great stuff on there, like, shockingly amount of great stuff where I don't quite know how it works. I rather not know how it works, but because it's there. So it's almost like you could probably save a lot of money in your life and just have those two free services, because you could, there's no way you couldn't finish watching all that stuff. And I found that, like a lot of people, sort of to answer your question, is like, you deep dive on something. I'm deep diving on a lot of the international fare that I'm finding on Netflix, because it's there. It's often super unpromoted. Mm-hmm. I mean, they don't even promote their American shows, but I've just found so many great Asian series. And it's just like, so many of my favorite shows from this year have been either on Netflix or Hulu, or they're coming from Asia. The stuff is really good. I think Germany has done a lot of great stuff. So international fare is good. I don't have Megahertz or MHC for the international fare. I know that Babylon Berlin just shifted over to there, but I've found that, like, I think I'm moving away from, you know, actually my partner Karen has Disney. I don't currently have it. I'm not watching a lot of Disney stuff. I loved it when I had it. But I think what I'm trying to do is I'll keep the big ones until I don't want it. Like, I'm on the verge of not having Max anymore, for sure, because the user interface is a disaster and you can't find anything. And by the way, I think that's part of the problem of these streaming services.
Yes.
That's a whole other story. They would probably be much more successful if they just made it easier.
Yeah. We talked about that back in the TV Talk Machine days. And I know I've talked about that with Julia, that if they invested even a fraction, a tiny fraction of what they do in content in user interface, they would be better off.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't think they would have the staggering losses.
They just don't think of themselves. They think of the digital guys as like, just like, a, hey, digital guys, build us a thing, whatever. And they don't. It's like, no, that's your product. That's literally your product.
You don't, and they don't want to know how it works. They're not using their own. They're not. If you're at Max, you're definitely not using the Max app.
I think this is a failure of leadership from the top and not thinking about this. I think even when you're building a direct-to-consumer brand and you're doing this very exciting new thing like Disney Plus, there's still a tendency to view it in the end as being kind of like you're programming ABC. And that is a mistake. And probably, I hate to say this, but again, but Julia has said it. You want some younger people in the room who are digital natives, who are digital content consumers. Like, I'm baffled by the fact that although Disney Plus has an extras tab on shows, and they have a lot of their stuff where they post things on YouTube, which is great. They should post things on YouTube. But why are the behind the scenes extras that they post on YouTube not also in your app? You want to keep people in your app. You want to drive more engagement in your app so that people stay engaged with your content. And yet the extras tab is largely just like a preview trailer, a promo trailer, and never anything else ever. And it's like, I know you have extras. I know you build stuff for DVD. I know you build stuff for YouTube. Why is it not in your streamer? And that's the streamer that actually has that in their app. Yeah, a lot of these other streamers don't even have that base level. It does boggle my mind that there isn't any attempt to kind of reinvent what the TV package is beyond we just put some more shows on. And that's it. And again, Netflix is the exception.
Netflix, you're right. They don't do a good job of that at all. But like,
but they obsess over their interface at least.
Yes, they do. And right or wrongly, however they're doing it, they're clearly succeeding. I mean, it tilts to what your biases are, so it's hard to find things. But that helps me because I help people find stuff that they're not either getting on their Netflix landing page or they're just not seeing at all. But yeah, I mean, to your point, like if you go on to the Criterion channel and their apps and there's just so much content about the contents, and then they mail you stuff, and there's just user engagement is really smart, and it makes you want to be in the app. It makes you want to be in that little biosphere with them. That's not true for these big streamers.
Yeah. I love your recommendations of Canopy and Hoopla, and I'll just more broadly say, wherever you are, if you have a local library, hopefully you know it and you patronize it anyway, but I will just say, don't write the library off as a place that you just check out books or use the computers. Many libraries have digital subscriptions to newspapers and magazines. There are, through Overdrive, there are books and audiobooks. Mm-hmm. And through Canopy and Hoopla, there are movies and TV shows. It's not going to be Netflix. That's not what it is. But you will find interesting stuff on Canopy and Hoopla that you also get access to for free from your library. So there's a lot of stuff you can build out for very little money.
Tons of stuff. So if anybody actually does go... listens to this and does go over to my Substack, I think that's still a free post. Because I think it's a public service. Like, I wrote extensively about the process of getting those channels, Canopy and Hoopla. But I also talk about, there's the fact that you can have audiobooks, and there's just so much things, so many free things in the library.
Get the Libby app on your phone, and you can read ebooks, and you can listen to audiobooks, and it's really all just from your local library. You should do it. Full disclosure, my wife is a librarian, but that's how I know about this stuff. But it's great.
Yes.
It's absolutely great.
God's work.
Libraries are continuing to be relevant in the 21st century.
They are.
So use them. Use them. All right. Well, that's going to wrap up this episode. If you have a question for the podcast, no letters this time, but Tim, in the truest tradition of the old TV talk machine, love to your mothers, downstreamfeedback.com. We still get people with their area codes and saying love to your mothers.
It
continues. It just continues on.
I love it.
This was our even episode. So if you're not a Downstream Plus subscriber, you missed the part where we talked about billionaires on yachts. It was really funny. If you want to subscribe, downstream.plus, you'll get full versions of every episode, access to the wonderful Relay FM Discord, bonus shows from Relay FM, and a whole lot more. And yes, the plan, I've had a couple of people ask, the plan is to keep the show going. The plan is not to wind the show down. Otherwise, we would have wound it down two episodes ago. I am going to have some guests. Eventually, we will get a regular co-host or two, and we will soldier on. And I hope you will continue to join me and all of my pals for that journey. You can find me at sixcolors.com. I appear on many other podcasts at Relay FM and theincomparable.com. And Tim is at timgoodman.substack.com, where you can read about, again, architecture, design, television, moving trucks, Portland, Oregon, Oakland, California, existentialism, big thoughts, Big Sur. And this is the beauty of it is, and the, people told me this when I went out on my own after working in at a big magazine for a long time was, oh, now I feel like I get a sense of who you are and what you're interested in. It's like, well, yeah, because now it's my thing and I get to just do what I want. Exactly. So, Tim, thank you so much for coming back on Downstream and filling in as part of our wheel of, it's like, you know, back in the day in the 70s when it was like Columbo one time and then Macmillan and Wife some other time, and you could be Columbo.
You should stick with it.
Yeah, it's great. All right. Thanks for being here.
You bet.
And everybody else, we'll see you next time.